Mike Bledsoe here, CEO of the Shrug Collective. Today, we bring to you a new show, Feed Me, Fuel Me, hosted by Jeff Thornton and Mike Landers. As we're expanding what we offer, traveling to great guests, and introducing you to the best content, we have partnered with amazing companies that we believe in. We talk and hang out with the founders and owners of these businesses. Not all products are created equal, even if it looks like it on the surface. We've done the research and have been in the industry long enough to see what really works and what will make the biggest difference for you long term. With that being said, one of my favorite companies, Thrive Market, has a special offer for you. You get $60 of free organic groceries plus free shipping and a 30-day trial. ThriveMarket.com/feedme. This is how it works. Users will get $20 off their first three orders of $49 or more plus free shipping. No code is necessary because the discount will be applied at checkout. Many of you will be going to the store this week anyway, so hit up Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/feedme. Enjoy the show.
This is episode number 106 of the Feed Me, Fuel Me podcast with our special guest, co-founder of the Barbell Shrug podcast, Doug Larson. Welcome to the Feed Me, Fuel Me podcast. My name is Jeff Thornton, alongside my co-host, Michael Anders. Each week, we bring you an inspiring person or message related to our three pillars of success: manifestation, business, fitness, and nutrition. Our intent is to enrich, educate, and empower our audience to take action, control, and accountability for their decisions. Thank you for allowing us to join you on your journey. Now let's get started.
What's good, fam? Welcome to another episode of the Feed Me, Fuel Me podcast, coming to you live from the CrossFit Games, literally out here at Vendor Village in the Fit Aid booth. Much love to Fit Aid for allowing us to do this weekend and have the esteemed pleasure of one of the co-founders of Barbell Shrug, Doug Larson, with us today.
Yeah, how are you, brother? Here. Dude, doing great. Dude. At the CrossFit Games, having a great time, walking around, talking to folks, hanging out. It's sunny out right now, sunny and warm. Right. Anytime it's sunny and warm out, I'm a happy person. Right? I grew up in the Northwest where it rains every damn day. If it's sunny out, I'm having a good time.
Dude, awesome, awesome. Yeah. You know, compared to last year, where it pretty much rained us out, this opportunity wouldn't have been possible. So
no way.
No, we're here rocking and rolling. For everybody who may not know, and it's hard to believe at this point that nobody knows what Barbell Shrug is or who you are and where you come from. Mm-hmm. Strangers have been walking up to you and shaking your hand and taking pictures all week, so that's got to feel pretty good.
It's fun, man.
Give us the cliff notes of where you come from, how Barbell Shrug got together, and, you know, give us the story, man.
Yeah. I'm one of those very fortunate people. You know, like, you meet somebody and they're like, God, I just wish I would have started CrossFit when I was like 12, that type of thing. Like, right. I'm that lucky person that started when I was really, really young. Yeah. So I'm, you know, lifelong athlete, you know, did gymnastics starting like age 3, age 4, did that for a number of years. I stopped when I was like 10 and started martial arts, you know, played baseball my whole life, played football my whole life. And then was very lucky to get a really good strength coach when I was about 14 years old. So I, at the time, thought, you know, I wanted to be a Navy SEAL. I thought that'd be really cool. And then what I eventually realized was I actually just liked the training that the Navy SEALs were doing. Like, I used to read all these books about BUDS, you know, which is basically like Navy SEAL boot camp. Mm-hmm. And I would do all the workouts that would prepare you to go to BUDS. And I realized eventually that, okay, maybe I don't actually want to go to war and do that whole thing. I just think the training's really, really cool. So maybe there's a different industry that I could go into. And that's, of course, the strength conditioning fitness industry. So I got a strength coach, very fortunately, around age 14. He was a former powerlifter who had learned Olympic weightlifting from Coach Bergner. And so I met Coach Bergner many times, you know, even up to 20 years ago now.
Wow.
And was able to, you know, get some coaching from him back at, you know, when I was like 19 at NSCA conferences.
Wow.
Which that strength coach would fly me around the country to strength coaching conferences even when I was in my teens. Just because he wanted someone to go with.
Yeah.
Like, he was a mechanical engineer. He worked at Hewlett-Packard. And was a strength coach on the side just because he thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
And so he never charged me a dime. I had free coaching, you know, for hours and hours a day, every day. He would, you know, we'd lift weights in his garage on Eleco barbells from day one. And afterward, he'd say, you know, I'm going to go make some food. I'm making dinner. You know, if you want to eat, you can come up here and grab some food. And while we were cooking food, he would teach me what was in all the, you know, different, you know, in the meats and in the vegetables, and, you know, teach me how to make guacamole. And he'd be talking about avocados and healthy fats and fiber and the whole thing. So I just was very, very fortunate. I had a very good mentor, you know, since I was, you know, mid-teens.
Yeah.
In a way that just, you know, I couldn't plan it better. So
yeah.
Really, really lucky.
Okay.
So that was kind of how I got my start.
That's dope.
Holy shit. So crazy. I mean, you're very much an early... What role did your parents play in that mentorship? Because that's very early adopter, like having a no-shit strength coach at 14 years old. That's something that's, like, becoming a thing in that age group.
Right.
You know, like, how did that manifest in terms of your parents just letting you spend that much time in the weight room?
Yeah. I mean, again, being a lifelong athlete, they just kind of expected that after school I was going to go to practice.
Right.
You know, whether it was wrestling, football, baseball, or whatever it happened to be, like, I never came home after school. I always went to some type of sport, whatever it happened to be, and they were just totally cool with that. That's a, you know, it's a healthy thing to do for a kid.
No,
like,
for
you'd
sure.
be doing many other things that were much worse in my parents' eyes than going to baseball practice.
Okay.
And then I met that strength coach at my high school.
Okay.
And so, you know, that's... You see, I'm hanging out with this guy. They don't know who he is. Like, I met him at school. He was a coach at the school, and then eventually broke off and wasn't a coach at school. And I would just go to at the time his apartment complex, and he had a garage gym.
Yeah.
You know, he had, you know, a half rack with Lego bumpers and kettlebells and gymnastics rings. Like, I had a CrossFit gym.
Nice.
Basically, before it was called a CrossFit gym.
Okay.
You know, we had weightlifting shoes. Didn't know anyone else that had weightlifting shoes. The fact that I had, like, no hundreds or thousands of people that own weightlifting shoes now, I never would have thought that was going to be a thing when I was, like, 15, you know?
Right.
And so that guy, very friendly person. You know, my parents dropped me off practice, and he'd go talk to them, and, you know, ended up developing a really good relationship with him. You know, he's still a very good friend of mine to this day. So my parents were very comfortable with me spending a whole lot of time with this guy who was only, you know, he was only like 25 at the time. He wasn't that old, really, in retrospect.
That's awesome. And then, you know, we just had Coach B on the show, and the fact that you have that long a relationship with him, that's massive mentorship that you now have a deeper access to doing what you do now.
Totally.
So from high school, where did you go from there?
I was encouraged very heavily by that strength coach based on, you know, my passion for training to go to undergrad and get my degree, my bachelor's degree in exercise science. Mm. And so I did that. I went to Linfield College and got my bachelor's. I did my senior project in 2005 on the biomechanics of snatching. That was my college senior project. And then with that same strength coach at NSCA, probably in 2005, 2006, he introduced me to Dr. Andy Fry, who was a professor at the University of Memphis who had done a lot of research on weightlifting specifically, done a lot of research on overtraining, and just he's a very prominent muscle physiologist still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do weightlifting-specific research, and University of Memphis was one of the best universities to do that at. And so me and Andy Galpin, many people will know, is a PhD muscle physiologist at Cal State Fullerton, one of my best friends in the whole world. Me and him were at that conference together, you know, over a decade ago. We had, you know, we went and had scotch, you know, we were having drinks and smoking cigars with Dr. Andy Fry, and that was like my graduate interview.
Lesson
to you kids out there, if you want like the in, go to Vegas and drink scotch and smoke cigars with your soon to hopefully be in the future professors, and that can be your graduate interview. You don't need to do the formal way.
Right.
It was way more fun than applying and like doing a phone call interview and making it all formal. I just called him up one day and was like, I would love to come. And he was like, okay, cool. You're basically in. Just, you know, send in the formal paperwork and I'll see you soon. That was it. It was awesome.
That's dope.
Awesome.
And during the entire process, like learning from all these great people, when did you discover that you had a passion or an interest in coaching?
That's funny you say that, because I actually don't consider myself to be a coach, like at the deepest level.
Okay.
I always love to train, and I know a lot about training, and I'm happy to share that knowledge, but I kind of think of myself as more of an instructor than a coach specifically. So I do coach a lot of people, but coaching was never something that I really wanted to do. Not specifically. I've done a lot of it, but I never really identified with being a coach, which is why I don't You know, I don't coach any CrossFit athletes currently at all. Like we do a lot of online training programs. Like I coach CrossFit classes, but I never really, like, adopted an athlete. Like I'm not like Jeff's my athlete. I've been with Jeff for 5 years, and like, you know, he was a new guy, and now he's a regionals athlete because I trained him for all these years.
Yeah.
Like it's just never something that I ever like aspired to do. It's not. Yeah. It's just not me. I like to have a lot more freedom to that. I feel like. Have commitment issues, but like I feel like it like ties me down in a way. Where like now that anytime I have to be somewhere consistently, I just don't really like it very much. So
we ran
the gym for years and years. I started CrossFit Memphis with Mike Bledsoe. He started in 2007. I officially bought in 2009 after I moved back from Australia, which is where I went after graduate school for a little while. Taught weightlifting at CrossFit North Queensland in Townsville, Australia, which was really, really fun. Came back from that and then officially bought it as the owner of the gym and coached a lot of people, taught a lot of classes, but that was more so me just really liking the lifestyle of literally living in a CrossFit gym. We lived in the gym for 18 months on, you know, mattresses in the attic above the offices for 18 months while we weren't making any money. And I just liked being in the gym.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the coaching piece that really drew me to hanging out in the CrossFit gym. It was just the lifestyle. I just want to be around other people that love to train and love doing weightlifting and love gymnastics because I thought that was like insanely special.
Because it
was the thing that I loved growing up, like throughout my like teens and in early 20s that I loved, that every time I brought it up, people were like, oh, I never even heard of that.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. Like most people haven't. They know what gymnastics are, but they didn't know what kettlebells were, and they didn't know anything about snatches and clean and jerks. And in graduate school, we competed in weightlifting, and then after graduate school, all of a sudden, all these people were interested in learning weightlifting and interested in just lifting weights, especially women. You know, women were not interested in lifting weights until CrossFit came around in the same way that they are today. You know, CrossFit really popularized weightlifting for the female population in a way that it hadn't done before.
Right.
And so it just turned into this really cool lifestyle, and coaching was like something that kind of just had to happen since I happened to own the gym.
Yeah.
And I was happy to do it, but I never really like wanted to be a coach my whole life. I'd much rather be an instructor, you know, do seminars where I'm like teaching people information, but it's not like this big long-term relationship piece which is kind of how I think about coaching. It's more like a big relationship you have with someone for a very long time. And that's not something that I was ever like really pushing for specifically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
What led to you? I'm interested. You said you slept in in your gym for 18 months.
Yeah.
What led you down that path? Like pursuing
didn't
entrepreneurship.
Have any money?
You know, like even pursuing entrepreneurship and willing to take that dive and doing that. Because a lot of people, they want that security blanket. They'll get a job, something that's safe.
Sure.
But what led you down that path of starting your own gym and you know, taking that big dive?
I feel like my answer is like the opposite of a lot of people, where they're like, "God, I was just really passionate about this thing, and I really want to make the leap, and I had to have all this courage and all that." It was like, well, that's all kind of also true, but really it was like, I don't want to go get a regular job. So what can I do to not have to be get a regular job so I can just keep having fun? You know, graduate school was over, and I didn't want to go, you know, work at a medical device company and write papers that have to get like approved by the FDA or whatever like boring thing I would end up doing with a movement science degree.
Yeah.
There's many other cooler things you could do than that, but like I just wanted to hang out in the gym. That's what I wanted to do, and so. Starting a CrossFit gym was, especially at the time, a very cheap business to start.
Okay.
And you could start with like $17,000 or something like that.
No way.
Which is not a lot of money. And the standards for gyms in 2007 were pretty low.
Yeah.
We had zero competition. We were the only CrossFit gym in town, so we could make a lot of mistakes. We didn't know shit about business. We didn't have a lot of capital to invest. We had a passion for training and we knew what we were doing. And you know, people could tell that we were excited about CrossFit weightlifting, powerlifting, which we had weightlifters, we had powerlifters, we had all these different subsets. It wasn't just CrossFit, especially at the time. And you know, we were able to survive on not that much money, and that's why we had to live in the gym, because I was making $900 a month, and I couldn't afford to you know, have rent also, because $900 a month, you're paying rent, it's probably all gone,
right?
Like just on rent,
sure,
depending on where you're at.
And where did the brainchild of Barbell Shrug come from? Because you describe yourself as an instructor, and based on the content that you guys have been producing for the last, are you guys 5 years in now?
Barbell Shrug started at the very beginning of 2012.
Okay.
Seven.
Yeah, so we're about six and a half right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
based on the content that you guys have just consistently put out week after week after week, and now it's manifested into the Shrug Collective, which we're extremely pumped to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now you've got the ultimate platform to be that instructor.
Right.
Where did that – was that like, oh, shit, if we do a show, I can now – put all that information out there and cast the widest net possible. Is that kind of like how it came together, or was how'd that go?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, like I see myself more as an instructor. When I think about instruction, being an instructor versus coaching, I think about instructors kind of project information to an audience, which is what I'm doing right now. Like I'm projecting information to all the people listening to this. It's a one-way communication with the audience, and I'm talking with you guys, but we're all instructing the audience right now.
Right.
And so, you know, doing a show was something that worked very well for me. It wasn't specifically coaching, even though I'm teaching a lot about health, fitness, movement, nutrition, etc. And so, I knew a bunch of guys who back then and still now, they were running these really cool online digital information product companies. And so I always wanted to have a 100% virtual company. That way I would have ultimate freedom. Mm. I could teach all the things that I knew, since I was so fortunate to have, you know, such a long-standing background doing all this stuff my whole life, basically. I recognized that I knew things that other people didn't know just because I had so much experience and I had the academic side of it and the mentors and on and on. I knew I had a lot to share and a lot to teach. I just need to figure out exactly how I wanted to do that. Doing it at the gym was certainly one level of doing that, but inevitably what I had tried to do back in like 2006 was I tried to blog a little bit and sell some online affiliate products. I sold some of John Berardi's stuff in like graduate school, and I never really got any traction with it because I'm not really into writing specifically. I don't like to sit down and write.
Yeah.
But I love talking and I love being on video and making videos. And so the turning point was when smartphones got popular.
Okay.
Once smartphones became a thing and you had HD video in your pocket everywhere you went and you could upload immediately to YouTube, I was like, oh, okay, here's the opportunity for easy content creation where I can share what I know, and it's not me sitting down bored in front of a computer and trying to like make everything perfect and organize the content and check for misspellings and editing, and like it's just a slow thing for someone who doesn't enjoy it in the first place. So once I was able to, you know, make at the time, a 3-minute video, because it wouldn't let me upload something to YouTube any longer than that. You know, I would just, at the gym, I would set my phone down, hit record, run in front of the camera, you know, yell at my phone since I didn't have like a lapel mic or anything, and I would teach weightlifting. And you can go find those first technique wads. They're not on the Barbell Shrug YouTube channel. They're on the Faction Strength Conditioning, or now maybe it's been renamed to CrossFit Memphis YouTube channel. 4th of July, 2011, the very first technique wad posted, and you can go watch it. Zilka's still on YouTube, and you can see what the quality looks like compared to like the things we do now.
Yeah.
It was good enough for the time, but you know, we've made a lot of upgrades since. But it was a lot more fun to do that than to simply, you know, sit down and try to do the whole blogging thing, which I had really no interest in. I was just doing because I didn't know what else to do. And so that was really the first show, and I made those shows. Partly because at the gym every single day, I'm having the same conversation over and over and over with all of the same clients and all the new clients, you know? And it's all, you know, you're teaching squats and deadlifts and snatches and cleans the same way to people all day, every day. You got, you know, teach 8 classes a day or whatever it is, and you do it for years, like you're repeating yourself a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I wanted to do was kind of document that knowledge. That way I could tell someone, okay, you know, wait on your heels or whatever it is, and then I could say, oh, and by the way, I made a video on that. I'll email it to you, whatever, and then they could go watch it, and then they're getting better from a trusted source, which is myself.
Yeah. Right.
and then they can get better at home, and they can come back and they'll get better results in the gym, but it's not taking up as much of my time now, but they're still learning it the way that I want them to learn it.
Right.
And so I was really doing it for the people at the gym, and then of course it's on YouTube and other people are seeing it, and having known these other people that have these 100% online companies, which is something I was really interested in, I, you know, spoke with them and had, you know, look at some of their business products about how to do the whole online thing, and, you know, create a website and, you know, started making an email list and started posting stuff on social media, had the YouTube account, of course, and I was going to, the model at the time was, I have a gym, I can use it like a studio, I can do seminars for my gym members whenever I want to, and I can record it, and then I can sell those things online, and it could supplement the income of the gym. So now we have multiple revenue streams. all things that I'm really passionate about that I think are really, really fun. And so that's kind of how, like, the business started. And then, so that was 4th of July 2011 that Technique Wad started. And then the first Barbell Shrug posted very beginning of March 2012, so about 6 or 8 months later.
Okay.
And then that caught traction within a couple months, really. And it was very obvious very quickly that, oh, Barbell Shrug is going to be the thing that really scales. Mm. That it's more fun to do than Technique Wad because we're just sitting around with all my friends now. Now I have a group. I'm not doing it by myself anymore. And I don't have to be all the knowledge all the time because I got other people that know what they're talking about,
yeah,
that I'm very friendly with. We've been training together for 10 years, so mm-hmm. like we have all kinds of stories to tell, all fitness and weightlifting related. People could feel that authenticity, and they could feel the closeness, the connection. They could tell that we're like super tight. We're actual best friends on a show together.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're a very diverse set of personalities.
Oh yeah.
At the same time, and that's good. Having that diversity was really, really powerful for Barbell Shrug,
yeah,
especially in the beginning.
And how did you, Mike, and Chris come together?
Me and Mike were competing on the University of Memphis weightlifting team together, and then Chris Moore was kind of like the sole non-weightlifter. He was like the only powerlifter in the group. But there wasn't any powerlifting at the University of Memphis, so he would come train powerlifting in the weightlifting room with us.
Okay.
He trained with Louis Simmons, and so he was a big fan of the conjugate method and chains and bands and the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought it was super cool that he was training with us, and we became very close over time. And then once we opened CrossFit Memphis at the time, and then eventually we renamed it as Faction Strength and Conditioning, and we were all out of graduate school, we all together, our whole weightlifting team basically from graduate school turned into like the beginning team for CrossFit Memphis.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And so go ahead, Durs.
Go ahead.
Oh, how did you, Durs and I talked about this last year, when you're building a business together with, several partners, how do you guys continue to maintain that relationship and continue to build that rapport and strength together? Because 7 years is a long time, and keeping each other's emotions in check and growing a business at the same time can be difficult.
Totally.
How did you guys manage that?
Well, it was easy for Barbell Shrug because me, Mike, and Rob, kind of the main guys who we kind of considered ourselves to be. Mike was like the CEO.
Uh-huh.
I was a COO in a way, and Rob is a CFO. And there's some overlap there, but that's like an easy way to think about it.
Yeah.
We had already been business partners since 2007.
Okay.
So Barbell Shrug started in 2012. So we started Barbell Shrug. We'd already been business partners for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was easy to do this bigger thing because we already had a very, very tight relationships. We already had a very good idea of our strengths and weaknesses, and who's going to do what, and all that. So it was pretty easy with Barbell Shrug, but with Faction, since we didn't know at the time that we were all going to very easily fall into those roles, it's just super lucky that we happened to not have the exact same strengths and weaknesses, which is common.
Yeah.
People get together and they're like, oh yeah, we're really passionate about this one thing, but really they're both like, it's like two creatives or like two like super analytical people that they want to do the same things in the company, and they don't want to do the other same things in the company, and then there's a lot of conflict. In our case, we were very lucky where it was obvious no matter what the task or role or project was, who was going to handle what, just almost purely based on temperament.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And personality types.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys had a very cohesive conversation style between the three of you.
Yep.
And I think that made for great, not only information delivery, but I think where you guys nailed it in terms of longevity is you also had an ability to entertain in mm-hmm. those conversations.
Right.
So, we've sat down in the NSCA conventions and like just step by PowerPoint,
Totally.
And you guys deliver a lot of that high level information, in a way that the layman or the newbie can understand and digest. And it's between the three of you pushing that information. Like, as I viewed you watching Barbell Shrug back in the day as I was opening CrossFit PHX, is like, okay, Doug's the technician.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a guest on, and this is probably never the case, but who's has a differing opinion or believe something that has been proven not so true.
Right.
Doug's the dude that's like, here's why I think that's incorrect, and here's 18 studies that prove me right. It's like between the three of you, that dynamic and that accountability is very, very apparent just watching the show.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I I definitely like accuracy.
Yes.
And truth, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also don't like conflict, and so I don't tend to like call people out and be like, that's fucking bullshit. I tend to be really polite about it. Yeah. At least I try to.
Sure.
But I definitely want the information to be very high quality.
Right.
Like high quality information paired with humor and entertainment seems to be the magical combination.
Mm-hmm.
That strength coach that I had growing up, he always said that really it should be about 25% content and 75% entertainment.
Okay. Okay.
Which for a teenager, you know, like that's perfect. Especially like, you know, as time goes on, I feel like teenagers need more and more and more humor and entertainment. Like if it's boring, today's teenagers aren't having it. No fucking way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe in the 50s, like if it was boring, people would feel like they had to be here. And they would just stay because they felt like they were supposed to. Some people may feel like that still, but a lot of people are just going to be like, fuck this shit, I'm leaving. This is boring. Like, why are you even doing it? It's so boring.
Right, right.
So we always knew entertainment was going to have to be a big piece of the puzzle. And then beyond that, not just like we want to make it entertaining for the audience, like we're trying to have a great time.
Yeah. Sure.
Like, if you want to have a sustainable company, like, at some level, it needs to be fun, or you're not going to want to do it forever. You're going to start like questioning your life and your decisions. Like, what the hell am I doing with my life? This fucking sucks. So, the entertainment piece is just a win-win-win for everyone. The more fun you can have, the more you're laughing. Just that's a good life.
Yeah, yeah,
that's dope. Mm-hmm. When did you all decide to make the transition or the move from Tennessee to California, and why did you make that transition?
So 2014-15, we were traveling a lot.
Okay,
we. Back on what I was saying a second ago, as far as it being entertaining and fun, we decided early on that if we were going to do this the right way, then we're going to do all of our interviews or conversations, everything in person. And doing it in person, though it's more expensive and it's more difficult and you got to travel more, and it's every part of doing something in person versus like doing a Skype call or making a phone call is more difficult, but it's way more fun to travel around the world with your friends and be able to meet cool people and see them face to face and develop a real relationship with that person, train at their gym, the whole deal. So we were trying to build a lifestyle for ourselves, a really fun lifestyle. It's like the most, like working for us is the most fun thing we can do. Like I couldn't create a vacation, this is an exception, it's a CrossFit Games, like, but even like our regular weekends where we go just hang out and podcast with people are on par with any vacation I could plan for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided from day one that we're gonna do everything in person. If we did Skype calls, I think we would have done it for a couple months and then been like, it's content, we need content.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't have content, then how are we gonna make money online and blah blah blah. Like it just everyone would have fizzled out. And so doing it all in person was just absolutely key to keep the team excited and motivated.
Okay.
Yeah. And I forgot the original question.
Oh, then
the move to California.
Yeah, the move to Cali.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, 2014. Check this guy out.
Okay.
Got that memory. So yeah, 2014, 2015. We were traveling a lot. We were flying like every week or two.
Yeah.
And that was fantastic, especially because I didn't have kids yet.
Mm-hmm.
That was great. We eventually decided, though, that you know Memphis, Tennessee is not like the fitness hub of the universe, and it would be a lot better if we went to Southern California, which absolutely is a fitness hub.
Right.
You know, there's so many people to interview between San Diego and Los Angeles that you know we wouldn't have to fly ever again if we didn't want to.
Sure,
we still choose to on occasion,
mm-hmm.
But we could just travel around by driving an hour or two at most, and pretty much find anyone that we would ever want to interview. Then on top of that, it's San Diego.
Yeah.
If you live in Michigan and you're a fitness expert and it's fucking January, you're going to pay your way to San Diego. I'm not going to buy your flight for you. You're going to be like, oh, I can go on vacation to San Diego and hang out with barbershop guys. Fucking sign me up. So people would fly to us whenever we wanted to do a show because it's a vacation spot. You know,
right,
it's a
right.
tourist destination, and mm-hmm. people are happy to go to San Diego because it's a great place to be.
Right, right.
Yeah. So we moved out there, you know, primarily for those reasons, just because it was a fitness hub and we wouldn't have to fly so much, and then people would come to us.
That's dope, man.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that, you know, you did all that and you didn't have kids yet and now you got three.
Yeah,
you know,
I do.
How's been the integration of your family into that lifestyle that you guys built?
Well, it's certainly more difficult to go on trips like this because now when I leave, I got to leave my wife with three kids. I have three kids under 3.5 right now. You know, I had three kids in less than 3 years. Three kids in diapers for a period of time. So that's, you know, that's a lot of work for my wife to handle on her own. So actually, we just recently moved back to Memphis, Tennessee, because my wife's family lives out there, and they're very, very helpful. And so That makes it where when I go on trips, it's a lot more bearable for her.
Sure.
Because I want her to have a good time. I want the kids to have a good time.
Right.
And it's just better having family around.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I never really cared about having family around.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I have a great family, and I would love to be around them, but it wasn't like on a daily basis, like, man, I really wish family was around because life would be a lot easier. But after I had kids, I started really seeing the value in having some family around to help out with all the little ones.
Which is it's super interesting to me as you guys continue to build, and it doesn't seem like there's any stopping in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever reach a point of inner dialogue where, because I experienced this with the gym, so I'm asking this question very selfishly, where you were kind of putting the business and the family against each other, consciously or subconsciously, like, you know, your progress in either one was kind of stagnated because you were conflicted?
I've often felt like that. You know, it's two very important things competing for my time.
Right. Mm.
I want, you know, both the business and my business partners and the gym members and our online athletes and the audience that listens to us to have the best experience I can possibly create for them.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with my wife and kids and all the other downstream family members. I want them to all have a fantastic time and have a good life as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I only have so much time in the day, and I, you know, it's very tough to make everyone happy all the time. And then when one party demands more time and attention, inevitably it takes away from the other one,
mm-hmm.
even if you don't want it to and you say it won't or whatever, like there's only so many hours in the day. So it's definitely it's a tough thing to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I try to do it as best I can. I don't think I get it right 100% of the time, but both those things are really important to me. So I work really hard to make sure that all parties are happy.
Sure. Because you obviously have an open dialogue with your business partners and everything.
Yeah.
You had that same two-way communication with you and your wife?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because running these various companies has made my communication skills much, much better because you have to grow and evolve. Like if you're growing a company where, you know, Barbell Shrug at one point, you know, when we were kind of at our peak, we had 25, 26 people full time on the team.
Wow.
Nobody sees that. You know, they're all kind of in the shadows in the background. People think we just talk on microphones all day, but it's a very small percentage of what we do. And that there's a real company, you know, behind it that needs to be there in order for us to do what we do. And so, you know, leading all those people and then coaching at the gym, you know, have hundreds of members and leading all those people, like your communication skills are going to get better, even if you don't want them to almost, just because you're practicing talking to people all day long.
Right.
And so that's actually bled over into my relationship quite a bit where I'm a much better communicator with my wife because of all the business stuff that I do.
Sure.
And then like the, you know, the deep rapport and the deep connection that I have with my wife actually helps with, you know, the more important people on business side, you know, mostly my business partners and our team members that I have a very strong relationship with. And so I feel like it's complementary to have kind of both sides of that equation.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What have you learned from being both a husband and a father now outside of communication?
That's a pretty open-ended question. So, I don't know. I'll turn that back on you while I think about it. Do you have any kids?
I don't have any kids.
No kids?
No relationships?
You got
no anything.
Kids?
Two.
Michael
two.
Got two. Let's turn it over to Michael while I think about that. What have you learned about being a husband or a father?
Dude, I got a two-year-old and a three-month-old, and there's a lot of, like you said, carryover from doing what I do as a coach and a business owner and a business partner.
Mm-hmm.
That comes over to how I raise my kids, you know, and part of that is just the empathy thing, you know, which wasn't really a strong suit of mine anyway. But having, you know, hundreds of people in our membership base, leading a staff of coaches, you know, the communication with my wife, and now having to deal with my children, it's that patience with instruction as they develop. You know, there's a lot of carryover between taking somebody who's brand new at weightlifting and, you know, taking a kid that, you know, hasn't spoken yet, hasn't walked yet, all those things. And it's very easy, as I look back on my less mature self, to want to rush that process versus just being patient with their development as I would with a member learning barbell or just CrossFit in general.
Right.
Movement. you know. So like that's been a huge carryover for me. It's just the patience thing, mm-hmm. and yeah. you know. Babies are just very volatile beings, you know what I mean? So 100%. when they go up, a very learned skill for me is when they go up, I come down, you know, and being equipped with that based on some of the emotional responses of members and, yeah. you know, their disappointment when they don't PR and stuff like that,
right.
you know, has definitely helped me be a better father, no yeah. doubt.
Cool. I'll play off what you said a little bit. I was using you to get ideas to answer the question.
I got you, bro.
I totally agree with so much of that. I have noticed as a father that my demeanor walking into a situation impacts my kids and their behavior a great deal.
Okay.
So if I walk into the living room and I want to, like, you know, I want to get one of my kids to brush his teeth, right? We just finished dinner. He's playing in the other room. We got to brush teeth and put on pajamas and go to bed, right? My kids aren't just like gonna stop playing and go brush their teeth and put on their pajamas like mm-hmm. on their own. You know, they're you know 20 months old and, yeah. and one of them's just over 3 years old. Like, it's not on their radar to do anything like that. They mm-hmm. just want to go have a good time. And so if I walk into the room and I'm like super chill and just and I'm relaxed and I'm calm and they can tell. They can really tell if I'm like chilled out and I'm not upset about anything. Like even if I'm not, even if it's like super subtle, like if they can tell that I'm frustrated or like I, you know, if I left the end of the day, the work day, and like I got like this open loop, there's something that I really wanted to finish and I didn't get it done. I'm fucking kind of pissed about it or whatever. Like, yeah. but I, and I'm not saying anything to anybody. It's just like this thing static in the background of my mind. It's like I feel like they can really tell that stuff. They can tell if I'm frustrated or if I'm just like a little bit agitated or if I'm like not fully present, if I'm not really paying attention to what they're saying 100%, even if I pay attention 99%.
Right.
It's like yeah. they can tell if I'm just like nodding my head going, okay, cool, buddy. You know, come on, let's go brush your teeth. Like, you know, I'm just like, if I'm just saying, oh, yeah, whatever, now do what I say. Like, I'm not mm-hmm. actually taking into consideration their thoughts and their feelings and their emotions or whatever. And so having that knowledge, now I go into situations where, like, I make sure that when I am interacting with my kids, that my demeanor is 100% focused on them, and I'm doing my best to always be super present, not lost in thought, and really listening to what they're saying.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that when I'm, like, really making a lot of eye contact and really listening to what my kids are saying, especially if I, like, kneel down, I always try to get on their level as much as I possibly can, uh-huh. then when I'm like, hey, you want to go brush your teeth? And they're like, oh, okay. And they comply with what I want them to do. There's no underlying resistance.
Yes.
Because right. I don't think in those moments they feel as controlled as they would be if I, as an authoritarian figure, came in and you fucking do what I say or you're in trouble. You know what I mean? And that's how business is a lot these days. It's not so authoritarian as it might have used to be, where like the boss comes in, the boss says you have to do the thing, and if you don't do the thing, you're in big trouble. That's strike one, strike two, strike three, you're fired. Right? It's not like that anymore. That's what bosses do. That's not what leaders do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Leaders are someone that you follow because you want to. Mm-hmm. You respect this person. This person's mm-hmm. a role model. You want to be like this person. You aspire to be like this person. You want them to like you back. You want them to respect you because you respect them. And that's how I view all relationships now. Mm-hmm. Like, just because you have the power doesn't mean that you should fucking throw it around. And if someone doesn't do it, then you stomp them with your power.
Right.
Eventually, that's just going to come back on you somehow,
yeah.
some way.
Yeah.
You know, maybe in the example of kids, like maybe I hammer them for the first 10 years of their life, 20 years of life, or whatever. They get out of the house, and then when I'm old and I need them, they're like, no, fuck you. And like when I needed mm-hmm. you didn't help me out. Sure. You fucking stomped me. Now I'm out.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
It easily could happen. And right. I don't want that to happen. Like, right. I want my kids to feel that I respect them. Like, when they talk to me, that they're being listened to, they mm-hmm. feel understood. I generally care about them and I generally love them.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll reciprocate that back to me. And sure. that goes for any relationship I could ever possibly have.
Totally. And it totally shines through in watching you with all these awesome people here that you have built some of the most genuine relationships mm-hmm. from the outside looking in that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
you
thank
know,
you.
That shines through in you.
Yeah. You know what? And I actually get, since we're at the Fit Aid booth right now, Orion's walking that way. Aaron Hind is walking over that way. Like that's something that these guys do really, really well, man.
Yes.
Aaron and Orion are the fucking greatest dudes ever. Like, they treat everyone with an immense amount of respect. Everybody loves them. They just know how to treat people right.
Right.
And I consider those guys to be role models. Like,
totally.
I want to run my company like they run their company, exactly. where everyone has a good time all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which leads me to my next question. When it comes to leadership, genuine relationships, all of those things. In the beginning, where did you become conscious of the importance and the difference between being a boss, being a leader, and the importance of creating those genuine relationships?
The very first place. So I used to follow a guy named Evan Pagan. I still follow him. He's an awesome person. And there's a very good friend of his named Brian Franklin, who was a leadership coach that Mike primarily worked with there for a little while. And Brian's an insanely intelligent person, like one of the most intelligent person I've probably ever met. And he wrote a book, which you definitely should go read. It's a very, very good book called The Last Safe Investment.
Okay.
It's phenomenally good.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you read that one?
It's in my queue, actually, in my Audible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Got to get through that book at some point. It's very, very good. And he was really the first person that really made all the distinctions for me between leadership, management, you know, being in charge, who's the boss, like that type of thing, and really pulled the leadership piece out and really made it where just because you're in charge doesn't mean you're leading, and just because you're leading doesn't mean you have to act like you're in charge, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so that was a big shift for me, realizing that if I want to go far in life, then fundamentally leadership was one of the highest level skills you could ever possibly have.
Right.
For all the reasons that I mentioned earlier. Like, mm-hmm. you need people to want to follow you. It's right. hard to get people to continue to follow you if they don't like you and they don't respect you.
100%.
So first you got to be able to like be the person, like you yourself have to be a person that's worthy of respect, and that's its own separate thing yeah. to go worry about. And then after that, it really is about how you treat people,
sure.
where they will also feel you're worthy of respect.
Right.
You got to respect yourself first, and you got to be a good person and all that, though.
And the reason I ask all that is because those are all things that are hammered into us as Marines.
Yeah.
You know, there's leadership where by position, by rank, and then there's leadership by committee almost, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, yes, we're going to do this because we have to. This is the mission.
Right.
You will go forth and accomplish it.
Right.
And then there's the other stuff that just makes the unit operate that much better.
Right.
And that requires buy-in because it doesn't necessarily have to be done, but it does streamline things.
Mm. Right.
You know, there's one way to approach the mission, and there's a whole other way to approach the unit cohesion.
You know
what I'm saying? So it sounds like there's so many parallels between what I learned as a Marine and, you know, what you've learned via business that are very complementary to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a piece about the military that I feel like I missed out on by not participating in any type of service where, like, leadership is such a big part of it. I feel like if I would have learned that earlier in life, you know, joining in Marines or whatever it is, you know, early 20s, getting those leadership skills, I think would have been really, really valuable. I didn't really think much about it until I was, you know, late 20s, early 30s.
Right,
so I feel like I'm a little bit behind the times with, or just behind the eight ball or whatever with learning leadership skills.
I'd say you're doing all right,
man.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Dude, so from hearing your story, to me, I define you as like an early adopter because you found CrossFit at an early age or like early period.
Right.
Then you get into podcasting at an early period.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, like taking the dive and pushing your limits seems to be like a huge part of your story. How do you continue to find your edges and limits and continue to push past that as you continue to grow?
Oh, I outsource all that stuff.
Everything.
I'm not even joking.
Everything.
I never really said it like that before, but I actually don't consider myself to be an early adopter specifically.
Okay.
If you look at that model of innovators, early adopters, early majority, late majority, and the laggards, I'm probably early majority.
Okay.
Easily. Okay. Maybe early adopter. What I've told people lately is like, maybe I am an early adopter, but I hang out with other people who are like super early adopters or innovators, and so I feel like I'm not an early adopter because like the context is that these people are so far beyond me, I must be more in the middle of the spectrum. But relative to the general population, maybe I am more of an early adopter. But really what I meant by outsourcing it is that I actually am not super proactive about starting new things.
Okay.
I generally like things to be well established as something that is really good or works really well or whatever it is before I want to invest all my time and energy into something. I don't like to be the person that that tests everything and realizes that, you know, 9 out of 10 things aren't going to work, I feel like a waste of my time. Bledsoe, on the other hand, loves to do that stuff. He loves to try new stuff. And, you know, anyone that tries something new all the time, you know, a lot of those things aren't going to play out the way you think they are going to, or they don't catch traction or whatever it is. But he enjoys the process of being one of the first people to try things. And so kind of the model that we've established is that, you know, he tries a lot of new things and he comes to me and tells me all about it all the time. And, you know, every once in a while I go, dude, that's the cool one. That's the good one. You know, and so or he'll tell me about something, and then the next week he's still talking about it, and the next week he's still talking about it, and the next week he's still talking about it. And if he keeps on something for a long period of time, I'm like, oh, okay, this thing might be something we should look into. So, you know, like the CrossFit thing. He tried CrossFit first, and I wasn't, like, super into it. Like, CrossFit specifically. I love weightlifting, powerlifting, lifting weights, et cetera. But Mike was, like, the first person to get into CrossFit specifically, right? CrossFit didn't have a lot of traction back in 2006 when we first learned about it. I didn't know what it was, and until I realized it was going to be a big thing, I wasn't, like, fully invested in it. So in 2006, I was kind of like, oh yeah, CrossFit, it sounds kind of cool, but I'm on the weightlifting team and I like weightlifting, so I'm going to keep doing weightlifting. And Mike was trying CrossFit, and I really wasn't paying much attention to it. And Mike was the one who decided to start the gym. And I, at the time, was like, well, that's cool. I'll go over there and lift weights with you if you want, and I'll help you out however you want. But I didn't want to be a CrossFit gym owner with him. Mm-hmm. I didn't buy until 2009.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But in part, that's because I was still in graduate school when I moved to Australia and all that. But Mike tends to be the early adopter, the real early adopter.
Okay.
And then I tend to come in not too far after him if it looks like it's going to play out and it's going to work.
Right.
So Mike started. It was his idea to start the gym. It was his idea to start the podcast. I did start Technique Wild on my own, so, you know, it's not like I can't start things on my own. But the podcast idea was Mike's. The Shrug Collective idea was Mike's. Like, a lot of the ideas that we have, you know, caught traction with were really mostly Mike's ideas. And then, you know, we have a lot of conversations about which ideas we actually want to scale and actually take action on. Uh-huh. And then once we come to an agreement about, okay, that thing's going to work, then I become more involved and we start to build and scale whatever it is.
Okay.
Yeah. So I know that I'm not like that, so I don't try to be like that. I find people like Anders. Anders is kind of like that. Yeah. Like Mike. Other people who are more proactive and more creative in those domains than I am, and I partner with those people. And just like those people. Just like
what do you mean?
Those bad people, those creative. Just like anyone that's the opposite from you, it's just easier to, for all the things you don't want to do. Like, yeah. I said, I don't like to do a lot of writing. Anders loves to write, and so I let him write everything. You know, yeah. He writes the emails and he writes a lot of the social media posts, and, you know, as we make ebooks and things like that, he does a lot of that writing. I might contribute to it, but I don't want to be the primary person, so I don't try to do it. I let him do that because he likes it and he's good at it.
Right.
So
right.
I think that's a big part of business is stick to what you're good at, stick to what you enjoy, stick to what you have the capacity to do, delegate, outsource, partner with all the other stuff.
Sure.
And so that way you're having a good time and you're actually doing something that you're really good at, which means other people are going to be more likely to think it's really good because you actually have a talent at that thing.
Right.
And then everything else that you're not good at, you don't have to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. That stuff you can let somebody else do. Yeah. That way it's whatever that thing is actually good.
Sure. And that takes a lot of honest introspection to develop a very real self-identity. Yeah. What are some of the instruments that you've put in place over the years or even currently that allow you to have that realistic look in the mirror of, this is what I'm good at, this is what I enjoy, this is my creative genius,
totally.
Right? So you don't step outside your lane and create a product that is less worthy of your energy.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that go into that. Having many, many conversations about business with a lot of business leaders, my business partners included, you know, we just have over time figured out what works and what doesn't, mostly due to trial and error.
Sure.
A lot of stuff that we do doesn't work. Most of the things we do, I would say, don't work.
I'm going to stop you right there, because I think that's huge.
Totally.
For people to really hear that, right, being willing to try all these things,
yeah,
with the understanding that more often than not, it's not going to work. But the shit that does work is massive.
Right.
Right? Barbell Shrug, right?
Sure.
So,
I mean, Google launches stuff and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Happens to everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure Elon Musk has almost gone out of business many times. Like, it talks about, like, almost going bankrupt. He got fired as a CEO. Steve Jobs got fired as a CEO. Like, no one is immune from failure or for something not working.
Right.
At all. Every entrepreneur that I know has some type of horror story where something didn't go their way. And,
right.
And disaster struck, but then they pulled their way out of it. So
right.
it's just a part of the game. You know, mm-hmm. you can be a professional soccer player and you fuck tear your ACL. It's like, it's just a part of playing soccer.
Yep.
And so you got to just recognize that, you know, ACL tears are normal and don't beat yourself up over it and do your rehab and get back on the field and play the game.
Right.
That's the damn truth.
So sorry to take you off track, but going back to like the instruments and what do you have in place
that keeps
you in your lane?
Yeah. I think one thing that really helped out was when I started learning about like personality typing. You know, like some of the stuff I don't do quite as much anymore, like the Myers-Briggs type stuff, Colby scores. I never really got into DISC and things like that. These days, after talking with Jeffrey Miller, who's a pretty well-known evolutionary psychologist, and now Jordan Peterson, who got really really big over the last couple of years, they both, you know, they come. Jordan's a clinical psychiatrist or psychologist, one or the other, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And then like I said, Jeffrey Miller's an evolutionary psychologist. Both those guys say that the big five personality traits, it's conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, neuroticism, and openness.
Okay.
So those are like the big personality traits, and that there's subsets of each one of those things. But you can score yourself in these categories and then get a really good idea of what your temperament happens to be.
Uh-huh.
If you do a Colby score, they score things like are you a strong starter or a strong finisher? You know, are you going to start projects and then get bored and move on to start another project? Mm-hmm. Or if a project has already started, are you going to drive that project to completion and make sure that it gets done all the way done?
Right.
You know, certain types of people they're great at starting things. Certain types of people are not great at starting things. They never start anything. Mm-hmm. But if you give them a project and give them the guidelines, they'll knock it out and they'll finish the project. So if you can partner those people together, good starters and good finishers, then that's a magical combination.
Sure. Right?
If you take someone who's super creative and really artistic and you pair that person with someone who's really analytical and really organized, then you can knock something out that is totally legit. So doing the personality typing was really, really important. The love languages is a kind of a similar thing. It's just like it just tells you categorically how people are likely to respond to certain stimuli, if you will. So I'm a physical touch person. So like if someone wants to like get on my good side, you know, like doing handshakes and bro hugs and all that, like that's how I know people are my friends. Like if I do. You know, if I walk up and say, "Oh, hello," and like we don't like shake hands or to give each other a hug, like we're not friends.
Yeah.
You know, like if we hug, we're more likely to be friends.
Right.
And so, just knowing that about myself, that you know, if you give me compliments, it's like it's very nice, but it's like not like winning me over. Like, hey, dude, good to see you. Give me a hug.
Right.
That type of thing. And everyone is like that to some extent. There's certain things that your personality or your temperament are going to be more successful. With a certain personality or a certain temperament over other things, and so doing these tests, so to speak, and figuring out what your temperament is, what your wife's temperament is, what your business partners, your kids, whatever it happens to be, really helps me shouldn't speak for anyone else. It really helps me just make better decisions about how I treat other people, what role to put them in, what projects to put them on, you know, just what I ask them to do. You know,
right.
If I give someone who's like super creative and they love to do all kinds of new stuff all the time, and I say, hey, you know, go into that Excel file and, you know, one by one, you know, make all those boxes green, where it's like totally monotonous. Some people will be like, oh my God, shoot me in the face. And other people are going to be like, oh, that sounds easy. Thank you for giving me something that's like that I know exactly what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just depends on who you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, really helpful. I think the whole psychedelic drug movement is really, really helpful for introspection. I've gone down to Peru and done ayahuasca. That's a level of introspection that I think is impossible to get any other way. So, you know, Google that if you don't know what I'm talking about. But doing things like ayahuasca in a safe setting where it's legal, et cetera, et cetera, I think it'd be really, really valuable.
Okay.
That's all. Where you currently are in your life now, how would you define your life's purpose?
So back to the original thing that I said about me being so lucky and having a strength coach from day one.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said that, like, since I got fitness coaching for free, high quality coaching, from early teens, basically, it's my life's mission, so to speak, to kind of give that back.
Okay.
Like, I think I'm so lucky that I don't really have to worry about my health like other people do. Mm. Even if there's something I think could be better, or you know, like I am not in as good a shape as I would prefer to be. I'm still probably in better shape than like 99.99% of the population. Mm-hmm. And if there's something that I want to improve about my fitness or my health, I generally have a pretty good idea of what I should go do. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I have all the answers or I know everything at all. There's still much more to learn. The rabbit hole goes very, very deep. Uh-huh. But I'm not generally worried about my health. And I don't feel lost. I think some people, they feel completely lost and they have no fucking idea what to do. And it's this hopeless feeling that they don't think they're never gonna get out of that situation. Now, mm-hmm. that's a horrible thing to I don't know what that feels like, but I imagine it's a horrible way to feel. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone should have to feel like that. So, like, part of my mission is to give back all that I learned in a medium like this, totally for free, where other people can take control of their own health. That way, they can be the healthiest they can be, and they don't have to fucking worry about it.
Sure, love
you
know, that, man.
They don't have that anxiety anymore. Yeah. So they can have peace of mind. You know,
mm-hmm. That's dope, man. I love that.
Yeah.
And before we let you get out of here, I want to ask you two questions in succession. They're about your daily routine and how you're living in the now.
Yeah.
I'll ask them in succession, then you can answer. The first of which, what do you do each and every day to feed yourself and kickstart the momentum for all the things that you're driving forward?
Yeah.
And then the second is, what do you do to fuel yourself to create that momentum, sustainable momentum over the long term?
Yeah. A few things. Especially now that I have kids, not everyone can say this. I'm pretty lucky to be able to say this, but I actually sleep really, really well. Debatably, I sleep better now that I have kids, mostly because the kids have a routine that's very consistent, and it's 7 days a week. So it's not like, you know, 5 days a week, and then the weekends you stay out till 3 a.m, and then you wake up at noon, like I've done before, you know, back in college and all that. I don't go out and party in the evenings anymore because every day I got to put the kids to bed at like 7:30 or whatever mm-hmm. it is, and then they're going to wake up at 6, no matter what, 7 days a week. And so having that consistent sleep schedule, I think, has actually been really, really good for me. And my kids, very, very luckily, thankfully, they sleep really, really well, all three of them. So right. I don't wake up during the middle of the night almost ever, mm-hmm. and everyone's shocked by that. But I don't know how or why that happened, but I'm very, very lucky that happens to be the case. So, you know, I get very consistent sleep, and then every morning I wake up. The first thing I do every morning when I wake up is I go to the bathroom, I weigh myself, I log my weight, and then I drink two very big glasses of water. And then I take a shower, and I go downstairs and make breakfast. And that's pretty much my, like, you know, a very small piece of my morning routine before all the other kid stuff and whatnot happens. But
right.
that very simple action of drinking two big glasses of water every morning, I actually really think prepares me for the day.
Okay.
Like it wakes me up better than drinking coffee, and I just feel really, really good about it. By the time I get to breakfast, I've already digested all the water, and I'm not thirsty during breakfast, so I can you know, eat a high quality meal where I'm not like, you know, I'm not missing out on a big breakfast because I'm drinking whatever at the same time. I pretty much only drink water. And that's been really, really helpful. I've done that for a couple of years. It's super simple. Anyone can do that. And I feel like that was a really big, really easy change.
Okay.
And where can this community go follow you and support you, both personally and professionally, my man?
Of course, everything Shrug Collective. Mm-hmm. Is this like the end of the show, pitch all of our stuff type of thing?
Yeah, that's
okay,
it.
Okay, perfect. yeah, I mean, Shrug Collective, you know, we have shows every single day. You guys are on Thursdays. We fucking love having you guys around, of course. Everything Barbell Shrugged, you know, we're Shrug Collective on Instagram now. Me personally, I'm Douglas E. Larson on Instagram. I'm also in the process of launching my own kind of side project site, which is DougLarsonFitness.com. Being an instructor and liking, you know, really enjoying teaching things, I like making courses. I like doing seminars. I like making online digital information product courses. And so I have a variety of movement-based and nutrition-based courses on DougLarsonFitness.com. So definitely go check that out. If you happen to hear this before that site is up, there's a landing page. Just put your email in, and then when it launches, you know, I'll send you an email, and you can go check it out. But that's more of a passion project for me. Okay. You know, most of the stuff I do is a part of the Shrug Collective, but I want to do a bunch of things that aren't necessarily, like, specifically for the Shrug Collective that I've wanted to do for a long time, and so I decided to start my own side project, purely as a passion project, just because I think it would be a lot of fun. On top of that, you know, we have many things within the Strut Collective. If you're an athlete and you want to have access to a variety of different training programs, we have the Shrugged Program Vault, which is basically a membership site where we put all of our training programs in there for one monthly price. We used to do training program launches, you know, like every 6 weeks we would launch a new training program. You only had, you know, the ability to join those programs once or twice a year. So if you want to do Muscle Gain Challenge, you would have to wait, you know, 8 months to get started. And that was, of course, you know, a pain in the ass for people that wanted to start today. And it was a pain in the ass for us because every 6 weeks we would have to, like, you know, do a big marketing push for a launch and then start it and then start prepping for the next one. It was like this never-ending launch cycle that we were on, which was cool, really cool for a period of time. Had a great time doing it. I really enjoy that stuff. But having all the training programs on one membership site is much less work for us, which is fantastic. And because it's much less work for us, we don't have to charge as much for it. So the athletes get access to all the training programs instead of just a single training program, and they pay like half the price that they used to pay. So it's just a better model all the way around. So if you want to, you know, get involved with Muscle Gain Challenge, which is all about building muscle, Flight Weightlifting, which is a very awesome weightlifting program, Shrug Strength Challenge, which is kind of more of a CrossFit-y program with a strength bias, those are like the three main programs. And then we have, you know, aerobic capacity programs, high intensity endurance programs, strongman programs, pull-up programs, overhead strength and shoulder stability programs. There's 11 programs total on there right now, and I add something to it every so often. I just put a new program that we did with Zach Avanesh on there a couple weeks ago. It's a gangster membership site. It's only $47 a month, which is fucking insanely cheap. So if you're an athlete and you want some online programming that's really, really good, and you have the ability to stop a training program and start a new training program as your, you know, interests and goals change without having to do anything, you just stop and start a new one because you have access to 11 of them, you can easily do that on that site. So if you're interested in checking that out, you can go to shruggedcollective.com/vault. And all the information about that program is on that site.
Dope, brother. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Dude, 100%. Really appreciate you taking the time this busy week here at the CrossFit Games. For everybody out there in Feed Me, Fuel Me land, make sure you check out the Shrug Collective. We drop on Thursdays. There's something dropping every single day. Check out the Vault if you're looking to step your fitness game up, and be on the lookout for everything that Doug is putting out on the personal side with his passion project, Doug Larson Fitness. And, dude, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, brother.
Happy to switch roles and be asking the questions on this go-around, man. Yeah. So much appreciated, brother.
Good time, and have fun. Thank you.
Definitely.
Cool.
And until next time, guys, Feed Me, Fuel Me.
And that'll do it for this episode with our special guest, Doug Larson. If you want to check out everything that Doug has going, go to the full show notes on shruggedcollective.com. Also, be sure to connect with us on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Feed Me, Fuel Me. We would love to hear from each and every one of you. If you found this episode inspiring in any way, please leave a rating and a comment in iTunes so we can continue on this journey together. Also, be sure to share it with your friends and family on social media, including Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, or any other social platforms that you use. We really appreciate you spending your time with us today and allowing us to join you on your journey. We would love to hear your feedback on this episode, as well as guests and topics for future episodes. To end this episode, we would love to leave you with a quote from Bruce Lee. The successful warrior is the average man with laser-like focus. Thank you again for joining us, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Way to make it to the end of the show. As always, go to Shrug Collective over at iTunes, give us a 5-star review, positive comment, and hit thrivemarket.com/feedme to get that great deal on awesome groceries. See you next time.